Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hour number two, what's happening? How are you today? Tiki and Tierney coming to you from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Challenging times. Rocket Mortgage prepared to help. If you need mortgage assistance, contact their team 24/7 at rocketmortgage.com. From their home to yours, the team at Rocket Mortgage is with you. We're with you as well. Tuesday around the country, CBS Sports Radio and CBS Sports Network here on the Daily Simulcast. Hopefully everybody's doing well as we move into some football stuff here. Enjoy the Shaq comments and the Shaq debate, or Shaq conversation. Not really debate. We were pretty much on the same page. Shaq conversation as you weighed in on the Saints and imploring the Saints the other day on Zoom with the Drew Brees stuff not to allow the outside influences to rip apart what could be something special.
It's the media.
The media referencing the erosion of the whole Lakers dynasty, of course. And let's face it, the reason that eroded was because Kobe and Shaq weren't always on the same page, and Phil kind of orchestrated it that way, the manipulation, and it worked until it didn't. So that was a really good hour. We've got a lot of baseball coming up this hour, so right now we'll devote some time to what, you know, to me. Now I'm going to just hand it off to the running back, let you get 30 touches here because this is all you. But when Dalvin Cook, who is a terrific player, all right, he's a dynamic player. When he's healthy, he is special.
Yep.
One of the top five in the game. You know, four, five, or six, right in that neighborhood.
There's no doubt about it.
Okay. But when he threatens to hold out unless he reaches, a contract extension, I mean, don't you have to? I know he's better than Melvin Gordon. Trust me. There's no doubt he's better.
Yeah.
But that's got to be fresh in the minds of him and his representation a bit. Yeah. What would that even accomplish?
So it's a little bit different for Dalvin Cook because Dalvin Cook was a second-round draft pick in 2017. So this is his
fourth year.
So it's going to his fourth year. There's no, like, fifth-year option. So there's no, like, prospect that he's going to get a franchise-type number next season if they decide to hold on to him. And so right now, his salary number, and I know you read this, BT, it's like grossly low for his production. $1.3 million is what he's making this coming up season. And he has been dynamic. Now, obviously, he tore his ACL 2 years ago and, you know, he missed that season. And, you know, you hate to pay a running back who has an injury history. But still, when you look at what he provides for this Minnesota Vikings team, which is acumen out of the backfield as a receiver, he's obviously a great dynamic runner. One of those kids like Christian McCaffrey who can go to the house on any play, whether you're catching the ball or running between the tackles, he can go to the house. He's a threat, which makes it so much easier for Kirk Cousins, who they just paid $30 extra million in an extension. Actually, I think it might have been more than that. Another extension for Kirk Cousins, you know, his success comes from the fact that they have a running back like Dalvin Cook. And so a different perspective than one I think you're intimating, BT, I think Dalvin Cook has to hold out, right? This is different than Zeke and Melvin Gordon. I'm trying to think who else did this. And Todd Gurley didn't really do this. They kind of paid Todd Gurley.
David Johnson hold out?
Not really. I think they just gave him money as well a year early.
Yeah.
And then he got hurt, and then he was never the same.
Now he's traded.
Yeah, exactly. Now he's traded. So I'm trying to think of, like, the other examples of guys holding out. Le'Veon Bell would be the other one I was thinking of. So unlike a lot of those guys who, you know, had been paid or at least had a contract, Le'Veon was a second round pick as well, but he had gotten some money. Dalvin Cook hasn't made any money for what he's doing. And as a running back, you know that your window to make that money is small. And it's not going to come easily. When you look at what Minnesota has right now, I mean, I know Amir Abdullah is on the squad. Alexander Mattison, who I don't know a ton about. They drafted him last year. I don't even know where he's from. Boise State running back. I don't know a lot about him. He has great leverage because they don't have any options behind him. Now, could they go find someone to fill the void? Yeah, they can get someone to get 20 or so touches a game and maybe get you 3 or 4 yards in a cloud of dust, but they're not going to be dynamic like him. He's in a unique position, BT, because I think he, unlike a lot of running backs, actually has leverage because of how important he is to the functioning of that offense. Now, will it work? I don't know. That's to be seen, because we know what the narrative is around running backs in the NFL. Oh, we can go find one, you know, or one will evolve. Or the kid that we took 2 years ago, he's going to come into his own. We give him some extra touches, he'll be fine. It's easy to say that. It doesn't always happen, though.
The one difference, though, and you talk about the draft status, and this is important as well. Le'Veon Bell, mm-hmm. you know, was in a similar situation, whereas Todd Gurley, first-round pick, Melvin Gordon, first-round pick, Zeke, obviously, top five, first-round pick. The, you know, to sit out, I mean, it's just, he's not sitting out.
No.
It's a hollow threat because he's got to accrue the extra year to get to free agency.
And look what it does to you. Like, maybe Le'Veon Bell is just getting old. But I think a big part of his ineffectiveness last year for your Jets, BT,
is
he didn't play for a year.
Yeah.
Right? You lose a little bit of your touch when you don't do it for a year.
I think I was also the worst offensive line of football.
That too, but still, you know what I mean?
No vertical weapons to really loosen up the box.
Also very
true. Bad play calling. Mm-hmm. A lot of things. But I hear you. He didn't look particularly spry. Although, to be fair, the first game against the Bills, when the Jets took that 16-zip lead, remember that?
Yep.
And then C.J. Mosley got hurt.
Yep.
He looked – I remember he caught a beautiful two-point conversion. Like, mm-hmm. he looked a little explosive. I don't know what happened, but you're right. He looked like a guy who had, you know, already passed the threshold of his prime. Now, I'm not saying that he's, you know, necessarily married to this fate. Maybe his body finds a way to regenerate this year. I hope. But, you know, Dalvin Cook with the injury – because he missed most of the season, hasn't mm-hmm. And I think he only had 230 or 235 carries a year ago.
Yep.
Even though I know it's more about touches, I get that. But, you know, Le'Veon Bell was force-fed the football, you know, playoff teams, mm-hmm. meaningful football to the end of the calendar year. Steelers were always in it with him. And he was, you know, running it. He was catching it 90 times, getting banged around. So maybe Le'Veon Bell is just a little shot. I mean, that's possible. Whereas with Dalvin Cook, in a lot of ways, he's still establishing himself. He's had one really good year. Great year.
Yep, that's right. One great year. But let's also not forget, if the Minnesota Vikings like him, and I think the Minnesota Vikings do like him, the leverage that he has, I guess they could franchise him, which would be interesting. It'd be an interesting tactic. But it would behoove them to do a deal with Dalvin Cook right now because he's a free agent.
Yep.
And so if he has another great season this year, and granted, he's playing for $1.3 million, which is the 39th highest salary of running backs in the National Football League.
Not as bad as Scottie Pippen.
Great point. It's a great point. But the 39th highest salary for the position in the league, it's just low. If he plays out and has another great year and they don't franchise him, he's just walking. And so, in some ways, if the Vikings like him, they actually should find a way to pay him. Now, the question is coming up with the number. Like, what's the number that he's going to accept? It's not going to be like Le'Veon. At least I don't think it's going to be like Le'Veon, where he's asking for, I want 12 for my running back prowess, and I want extra 4 or 5 because I'm your leading wide receiver as well. I don't think he's going to go that route and ask for $15 or $16 million.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's asking for around 10 or so, 10 or 11, which is the average of these top guys, now that Christian McCaffrey, he's 16, it's kind of risen a little bit, but still, if he's asking for around a 10 to 12, I think that's doable and it's swallowable for the Minnesota Vikings. They should do it. They should find a way to do it because he's one of those unique players that we always talk about, like these guys who can play every down, first, second, third down. They're dynamic. They're game changers. And without them, your offense changes significantly. At least the running back's impact in your offense will change significantly.
Yeah, I read something this morning. He might be fishing for something in the neighborhood of about $13 million, mm-hmm. which is what David Johnson makes.
Yep.
Now with the Texans, as I said before. Let me read this for you. This is from Tom Pelissero, and this is interesting. If Dalvin Cook does not report on the mandatory reporting date next month with his teammates, or at any point thereafter does not fulfill his contract for any material period of time, he would not accrue the fourth season he needs to become an unrestricted free agent next March. Instead, he will be a restricted free agent, meaning the Vikings, and this is pretty much what Tiki was saying, but just to get it in proper, you know, specific verbiage, meaning the Vikings could retain him with a first-round restricted tender worth between $4 and $5 million instead of having to apply a franchise tag that would be worth roughly double that.
Yeah.
From that point of view, that's certainly palatable financially from the Vikings' point of view, but I'll give you an aspect of leverage which I can't quantify for Cook, but I do believe it would probably mean something in the hearts and eventually the methods of the Vikings. The Vikings are on the short list of teams that can win a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
They are.
That's right.
You know, this isn't like a situation like, say, the Bucks last year or the Bills 3 years ago. This is the Vikings, who are really good, really good. It's also a Vikings team who lost Stephon Diggs. Now, I hailed Justin Jefferson as the steal of the first. I love the kid. I think he's going to – they're a lot cheaper than Diggs. Diggs wanted out. He was starting to chirp a little bit. I think it'll be fairly seamless. But in terms of Jefferson taking over for Diggs as the number two behind Thielen. But do you really want to enter a season as, you know, a Super Bowl contender and your two of your three primary – sources of offense are gone?
Yeah, from last season.
From last season?
Yeah, no, you don't. Because now you're learning. You got to, and we already know this offseason is convoluted. It's going to be messed up. You're remote learning as it is right now, and then you're not going to have any on-field activities, you know, for maybe another 3 weeks, maybe longer, right? So, yeah, I agree with you. That's the one piece of leverage that they do have, that Dalvin Cook does have. But, I mean, I think they'll find a way to get this done, and I also think that Dalvin Cook, while threatening this as a holdout, probably will look at recent history and say, man, that's probably not good for me on field right now. It just doesn't work out. Like even Zeke, who held out for most of training camp, he came back and he was good.
I think he held out the entire camp.
I think you're probably right, BT. And he was okay, but he wasn't the Zeke that we kind of remembered. You know what I mean? He wasn't like just explosive and dominant and running through people. It's just you miss something when you're not there, especially as a running back, because it's a dance. What are you guys doing in front of me? And how am I fitting perfectly into this, you know, the right space? And the only way to know it is to get repetition doing it. And so when you hold out as a running back, you miss out on a lot, and it ends up coming back to haunt you. And so I think he can threaten holding out. I don't think he actually should. And I think the Vikings should find a way to get this done because it's best for them right now.
He's going to get paid. He's going to get paid. How much? I don't know. He's going to get paid. This will not be Melvin Gordon.
No.
You know, it was painfully obvious that the Chargers just didn't value Gordon.
No. Well, they had Eckler. I mean, he's not the same, but he's good enough that you weren't going to really miss Melvin Gordon. And so they had no pressure to sign Melvin Gordon, especially for the number that he won.
No, Melvin Gordon's good.
Yeah, I'm not saying he's not good.
No, I know.
But Dalvin they didn't have any Cook pressure. Yeah,
he's
exactly
a game changer.
That's right.
He's dynamic. He's the kind of, he flips the field like that.
Yep. By the way, Melvin 60. Gordon hadn't played, I mean, only played 16 games in 4 years.
He was hurt a lot.
Yep, once.
No touchdowns as a rookie. Yep. Remember that?
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, we were sitting here saying last year, I don't know, man, Melvin Gordon, I certainly respect, I appreciate your hustle to get every penny. That's what we all do in our individual lines of work. Do what you got to do to get paid. I mean, that's business. But there's business that seems sensible, and then there's business that just kind of seems as if it's going to be a waste of time. And Melvin Gordon, to his credit, he was pretty forthright. He's like, yeah, it really didn't do anything. I probably wouldn't do it again. Dalvin Cook he's getting paid. Now, let me ask you this, though, before we move on to some baseball stuff coming up next here. We talk about, and we just had this conversation the other day, yesterday, Michael Irvin's comments about Dak Prescott and how the Cowboys, this is Michael's words, kind of owe him for, you know, back pay, if you will, based on his draft status versus what he's done, you know, commensurate with his salary, et cetera. It's not commensurate with the salary. Do you think, and we also said we were critical of how Dallas didn't necessarily read the financial room properly as they were giving out all these other contracts. They let this situation kind of go awry, and now they're where they are. Do the Vikings need to read into, well, you know, the Giants are getting ready to pay Saquon Barkley pretty damn soon and a lot. Do they need to do something like almost preemptive of the next two or three big contracts that will come?
Yeah.
And get them on the cheap, if
you
will. Yeah,
maybe. But I think the running back position, unfortunately, and I love the position, obviously, unfortunately is not going to be subject to that. I think it's going to be what the market and your specific market bears.
Yeah. Well, the right? most recent market is McCaffrey.
Exactly. But McCaffrey is different, man, because their quarterback is making $21 million, right? And that's probably 8% of the cap or something like that, maybe 9% of the cap. And as much as we like Teddy Bridgewater, the face of the Carolina Panthers for the next two or three years is going to be Christian McCaffrey. Mm-hmm. So he's like their guy. He's who they're building around.
Yep.
It's not Teddy. And so it's a unique situation. So they can afford to pay him that way. And plus, I mean, what Le'Veon Bell claims that he was, that's what Christian McCaffrey is, right? I am the best runner on this team and in the division. I am the best receiver on this team, having 1,000 yards and like an 88% catch percentage or whatever it may be. Now, granted, most of those are dump downs, but still, he's reliable. He had 1,000 yards receiving as well, which has only been done one other time in league history, and that was Marshall Faulk back in 2004, I believe. So it's like he is that guy, Christian McCaffrey. So that number 16, it's worth it. Zeke held out because he knew that, you know, the franchise tag, the fifth year option plus the franchise tag was going to pay him what it was going to pay him because of where he was drafted as a top five pick. And so those two are kind of outliers. Yeah. Saquon will be an outlier too, but I think for the most part, other running backs are going to have to get paid what their teams can bear. And so it sucks. It's unfortunate, but this is how it's going
to
go.
It makes sense, you know, and it looks like Carolina, obviously, they were able to do this. They've got, you know, Curtis Samuel, young skill guy. Yep. You know, you gave Robbie Anderson a few bucks. That's relative peanuts, $8, $10 million or whatever it is from the Jets. Big deal.
Not overpaying for anything.
Not overpaying there. DJ Moore is a good player, not really making big bank yet. So their skill guys who find the end zone, aside from McCaffrey, are making peanuts. Whereas you look at Cooper, you look at Zeke, you look at that offensive line, and then you even look at the Vikings, and weren't they like $5 under the cap?
Yeah,
it was like some
they were, which is why they redid Kirk Cousins.
Correct.
So
correct.
Now they're $11.5 million.
Yeah.
Under the cap.
Freed up with Diggs now in Buffalo a little bit there. But no, all right, we'll see. So you and I both agree. He's getting paid, and he'll probably be pretty happy when he does, right?
Yeah, he will. They better get it done because they need him. Their offense revolves around his ability to create suction, meaning linebackers coming up, his abilities to make big plays, and he makes it so much easier for Kirk Cousins, who they just paid a good deal of money.
All right, give you the last word on that. Coming up next, what is the word with baseball? Maybe a little revision here. I know. How many games are we playing? What percentage of the salary are they going to get? What's going on? This might be good. This might be a positive development. We'll tell you what's happening with baseball and, more importantly, where it might lead to. That's next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 1-855-212-4227. It's 855-212-4CBS, sponsored by Geico. Geico's introduced the Geico Give Back. It's a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current new customers that'll last your full policy term. Just visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility. I got a guest up next segment. Will Middlebrooks, former Major League infielder, part of CBS Sports family on HQ. And he's a good voice. Will is pretty strong on TV and on the HQ side, obviously, and digitally. So we'll get him up coming up next and to explain all the minutia. What you need to know is this. Here's the latest update from the circus. I mean, from baseball. Let's see, T. Major League Baseball has made proposals to the players here. 75% prorated salary, 76-game season. Okay, we're moving up, getting off that 48- or 50-game season, which is ridiculous. Playoff pool money, no draft pick compensation for signing a player. Season finishes September 27, which is very important to the owners. Obviously, they don't want to go into beyond October for the World Series, even though I think anybody with a sensible approach to this says, you know what, you can find enough warm weather stadiums or domes where you could, you know, play more than 76 games or more than 85 or more than 100 games if you're willing to be a little creative like the NBA, but of course baseball has no creativity. let's see. Postseason ends at the end of October and significant move towards player demands and effort to play more. That's from Carl Ravitch, who had that. I guess they also want the players to sign a, what's the exact terminology, an acknowledgement of risk paper, which, or some sort of form there.
Yeah, to exempt them from if they should get sick and have coronavirus and something else happens downstream for that.
Is that unreasonable?
No, I get that because I think, especially, what was that article about 3 weeks ago, maybe it was a month ago, maybe even more, was talking about all of these Major League Baseball players that have underlying issues. They're all like, they all want to play, obviously, but if it's a significant risk if you have an underlying issue and you should come, you know, you're more susceptible to COVID-19's negative effects. So I don't think it's unreasonable for sure. It's just really interesting that they're going to ask for that.
Yeah. I mean, listen, the push here basically is the prorated portion of the salaries for.
Yeah, it's all about money.
It's all about money. We'd be lying to you if we said it wasn't. We've told you it's about money from day one. Mm-hmm. I also thought there was an ounce of sensibility, and I still believe it will ultimately infiltrate these discussions based on, you know, what happened in 94. And if they're leading, and I've said this, I don't need to get into it too deeply, but I've said this a few times now because it's really important. It's paramount. I think, like, if I'm running baseball, even if I'm really, truly married to my most inflexible financial demands at the point of these conversations. If I'm running the show, I have to know that, you know, reaching for the 1994 playbook is a failing move because baseball is not in 2020 what it was in 94. Not even close. And I love the game, but I got to be real. So I think baseball is sensible enough to know, which is why I've always said I believe there's going to be a season. I've never really pretended to know or even guess how many games it will be, what exactly it will look like, what players might withdraw from this for their individual reasons. But I still think there's going to be baseball, and I still think that there will be more concessions on each side. This is just... I know this is becoming a boring conversation, but it's posturing. I get it.
If you look at the monetary side of it, it's actually not that boring because there was a...
To the average fan, I mean.
True, I know, but still.
They don't want to hear this.
Because look at the narrative that we talk about. It's always, you know, billionaires fighting with millionaires. But Bill DeWitt Jr., who is the Cardinals, St. Louis Cardinals owner, said in an interview... I forget who he was talking to, but he said, this industry isn't very profitable. And you find that hard to believe because of the amount of money that Major League Baseball makes and seemingly brings in. But again, it's not necessarily about revenue. It's what's your margin on that revenue. And because there's so much overhead and there's so many minor league considerations and the travel and everything else that's associated with it, maybe it's not that profitable of a business. And the only way that the owners are going to get any sympathy for that is if they give some semblance of what their books look like. That might be the only way to get this thing solved. From a player standpoint, you're not going to believe that the owners are crying poverty right now. You just don't, it doesn't make sense to you. Especially some of the salaries that these guys have been paying out. You can't reconcile that you're not making any money when you're doing these things. So the only way I see this thing kind of coming, to reason, BT, to your point, the players will have some concessions and the owners will have some concessions as if there's transparency on the finances of this. Right now, it feels like they're fighting for like limited resources. Like, there's a little money coming. We want our piece before we give you your piece. The only way the players will agree to that is if they see, they actually see that some of these teams aren't financially as powerful or as strong as we all assume that they are.
Yeah, I hear you, but I still think the prospects of no season this year, all right, this is where I think, and if there's any sport that really makes me guess the most, it's baseball, because Rob Manfred has fouled up many occasions since he's came into commissionership. He just has. I mean, you go back to the digital scandal with the Astros. He's been a mess. I think his intentions are good, but I do think he needs to be better, bluntly stated. He needs to be a better commissioner than he's been so far. But, I still think that, the sensibility and the rationality is going to win out that You know what? Okay. All right. We might be getting a little squeezed here.
Yeah.
Talking about each side. But 2020 without baseball, I don't like to use the word stupid that much.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I can't believe that anybody with any sort of investment emotionally and obviously economically to the game of baseball views no baseball as a more plausible path for a bright future than limited baseball with, you know, taking a dent on the rear end in terms of revenue. I mean, really.
Yeah, I agree. And the problem is that the math is fuzzy in baseball. It's not like in the other sports, NHL and NFL and obviously the NBA, where there's revenue sharing plans. It's what are people putting in? What are fans and sponsors, what are they putting in? You get the total league revenue and then you divide it based on some percentage. And in Major League Baseball, because it's not that, it's not clean. It gets emotional and it gets less about objectivity and more about subjectivity, like what we deserve versus what you deserve, as opposed to what you're getting and what I'm getting. It's there's no choice, right? There's no choice to argue it. And that's why we see MLB, the NFL with a plan, or really they don't need a plan yet. But that's why we see in the NHL that has a plan already. It's why we see the NBA that has a plan already, because the finances aren't really debatable, right? There's collectively bargained percentages that go. MLB doesn't have that. Now, they didn't need it because they never have had a stoppage like this, at least not a non-self-inflicted stoppage like this. But I think we're seeing in times of crisis why a revenue sharing plan is so much more beneficial to leagues than a non-revenue sharing plan like Major League Baseball has right now, because you just can't figure it out. Emotion gets in the way.
I don't know why this shouldn't be this hard.
It's not. It's this hard, BT, because it's emotional and it's subjective. It's what you think. So you're an owner, I'm a player. It's what you think versus what I think, as opposed to if you were the owner of an NFL team and I'm a player on an NFL team, it's like you get 51%, I get 48, or 51.5%, I get 48.5%. It's like it just is what it is, right? You know what I mean? Whereas in baseball, it's kind of like, you tell me what you want, I'll tell you what I want. No, not even close.
And in circles we go.
Go in circles. And then you get pissed off, and then you start arguing about it. And then you start leaking it to the media, and then you start, subtweeting, and you get all this nonsense going on.
Yeah.
And it's never going to get fixed, right? Because there's no math that fixes it. In other sports.
And there's no trust.
There's no trust, and there's no math that fixes it. In other sports, math will fix it, right? Mm-hmm. The equation that you've all agreed upon will fix it. In baseball, there's no equation, which makes it kind of up in the air.
Throwing darts.
It's exactly right.
Throwing darts. All right, T, coming up, let's get the update from Mac. Will Middlebrooks played the game, infielder, part of the CBS family, CBS Sports HQ. Get his thoughts on this. There's also some changes, some tweaks to the playoff field based on what was presented versus what I know Joel Sherman had a pretty good piece in the New York Post about that today. Players, I believe they're being asked to respond by tomorrow, Thursday. I mean, listen, it's the middle of June here. I mean, so it's eventually go time. If they don't want to play into October or past October, which they obviously don't, they're hell-bent on not. Something's going to come to fruition, and I believe positively within the next few days. But Will Middlebrooks obviously play the game, more piped in than we are. We'll get some definitive answers, and that is next after Rich Ackerman's update, which is right now. Here's Ack. Ah, it's good music right here. Good music. So, she says, have I got a little story for you? What do you think, Teak?
Mm-hmm. Who is this?
Who is it? Little Pearl Jam, brother.
I thought so.
I know you know this. Tonight at 8 Eastern Pacific, the cast of We Need to Talk, they'll engage in an important dialogue about social activism and its deep impact in the world of sports. So the women will be doing their thing tonight as they usually do, right here on CBS Sports Network, also home to Tiki and Tierney, the Jim Rome Show, Boomer and Geo in the mornings, my guy Adam Schein right after us, a little time to shine. We got it all for you here, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Of course, Tops on Sunday, all sorts of programming, college hoops, college football games, once we get back to that reality that we all miss. And hopefully everybody's having a good Tuesday. This will be fun here, Teak. We're joined by Will Middlebrooks, who joins us now, played the show 6 years, and started off really promisingly with the Red Sox, was a pretty early draft choice. I want to say around 5 or 6. And he has since transitioned to the booth, or to at least to the studio. And he's cutting his teeth, and he's with CBS Sports HQ. He's got good opinions, and he is with us here to help us guide through this mess. Will, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. How you doing today?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
We're doing well. Appreciate you hopping on, man. The first question is going to be a tough one, but only if you choose to make it tough. Okay? Here's the challenge, Will. Somebody who knows baseball forwards and backwards. You could obviously expound on this in ways that we can't. But the challenge is, Will, I need you at least for a second, or at least for this answer, to take off your former baseball cap. So answer this question as an informed analyst, but not necessarily as a former player, if that makes sense. And my question is this. Who's more at fault right now? In terms of the public perception, everybody's dissatisfied with the way this is going. Right now, based on what you think, who is being more unrealistic in their request / demands?
Well, number one, it's really hard for me to take off that hat, but I'll do my best. Okay. So if you're reading Twitter, it's all about how, I would say 80% of it is how awful the players are, how greedy they are, money hungry, selfish, you name it, that's what they are. Now, if you really dig into this whole thing, I feel like the owners are at, and you're going to say, oh, he's a player.
Yeah, no,
I get
no,
that.
No,
I get
no,
it. I no, think the owners no. are at fault here. I do. Okay. I understand this is a business. I get it. I know how bad it looks in the public to talk about all this money being thrown around and guys making $1 million instead of $2 million. I know how bad that looks, and it's hard to talk about it on social media. And it's my job now, as you said. But, you know, I have to – what I think put the truth out there, and what that is I think the owners are putting certain proposals out there just to create a reaction from the players. They know they're going to deny the proposal, but it is somewhat turning the fan base against the players.
Now, who does that serve, Will?
The like, owners.
I mean, it serves the owners, but it, at some point, the players or the fans get so mad at the players that it, you know what I mean? It like undermines what the owners are trying to do. You know, you get what I'm getting at? It's like you're cutting your nose off to spite your face. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. You're pushing people away just to like try to get a financial edge in a pandemic crazy year. It doesn't make any sense to me.
They view this year as a wash anyways. Mm-hmm. They're not going to make money regardless. They refuse to open their books and show us how big the losses will be, which is weird to me if you're really trying to negotiate and get this done and play baseball.
Yeah. Will, would that help, by the way? By the way, Will, would that help if the owners open their books? Sorry to interrupt you, but if they open their books and said, look, we're trending into the red right now, would that help from a player's perspective?
We know they're in the red, but I don't think it's as much as they're claiming, and that's why they're saying they can't honor the agreement they made in spring training of paying the full – prorated amount.
Gotcha.
The players are just asking to be paid for what they do, what they work for. If they play 50% of the games, they want to get paid 50% of their salary.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking to Will Middlebrooks, who was a champion, forever champion, 2013 Red Sox, and played third base 6 years in the show. He's with us here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports HQ analyst now. You know, to me, and I'm curious how you view this as a player. Obviously, we've seen, happened last year. Nationals threw 50 games, roughly, or 50 games, I think, actually, on the button. They had 19 wins. So, in baseball, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. Teams mm-hmm. get hot late. You get into the right series. You have a couple of capable arms. You throw a couple of zeros up on the board. You take the first two games. Boom, you can win a series you're not, quote-unquote, supposed to win. But a 48-game season, listen, I'll take it over no baseball, clearly. But as a player, how representative do you think that would be of like, really, what's what? 48 games? There's still guys who are batting .420 after 48 games. You know, what is 48 games?
Yeah, no, I think you just have to take what you can get. I mean, whatever we're given, they're just going to have to do their best. And, whoever wins it. You can't – I know there's going to be somewhat of an asterisk next to it. I get that because – we are ingrained in this 162-game grind, and that is what's normal. People have been pushing for a shorter season for a long time, but not 50 games, not 48 games.
No.
I think it'll be super interesting for the fans. I mean, every game, I mean, for the players as well. I mean, the superstars are going to be on the field every day. Because
yeah.
if you lose 3 or 4 games in a row, you might miss the playoffs.
Unless a guy gets hurt, Will, and he misses what equates to half of the games, like, God forbid, like a Mike Trout or an Arenado or a Judge who's shown a propensity to get hurt, and that could really derail the team, where at least if
Absolutely.
You get hurt over 162, there's enough time to make it back. If you get hurt at the wrong time, your season's over as a team.
Absolutely. There's so many variables that are really just exemplified because of the shorter season. Just like you said, the injuries will play a huge part in that. Teams that, I mean, we look at a couple years ago, you look at the Marlins, they ended up losing 100 games, but if they played a 50-game season, they would have made the playoffs.
That's right. They started well. That's true.
Yeah. Now, you know, it's interesting because you start talking about who's going to have a better shot to make the playoffs, and you know this because you played professionally. Certain teams just start slow, and some are come right out the gate, and you know exactly what they're all about, and they make adjustments, and trade deadline happens, and all of a sudden they're a World Series contender. Who does this benefit? Like, what team are you? Can you look at and say, man, this team is, I mean, they're young, they got, you know, fresh arms, they're gonna come out of the gate flying and actually might have a shot, even though on a 162 game slate they would not have no shot. You know what I mean?
Right. No, talent level is so high. This is the pinnacle of the sport. But I think this is what will really help teams, or it will help the cold weather teams. Like you're starting in April in Boston. I can talk to you about that when there's snow flurries on the field and when you're warming up and you got to go hit against a guy throwing 100. It's not fun. So I think it's going to help the teams that start in the Northeast or, you know, that don't have a roof and cold weather. And I think that's going to help them the most.
You know, one thing I worry about, we're talking to Will Middlebrooks, former big league third baseman, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. You know, the 94 cancellation of the World Series, that was devastating to me as a Yankees fan. I've had a lot of great moments since then. But having been too young at that point to really even remember or enjoy the World Series championships in the 70s, like, that was my point. Finally, as a Yankee fan, I get to see something good here. My guy Mattingly, get to see what this Yankee lore is all about firsthand rather than seeing highlights on YES or MSG. I think that the romanticization of the game, I don't know what could propel baseball back like the home run did a couple of years after 94. If there's no season, or this season, or the fans are so disenchanted with the way this plays out, what could baseball do to gain fans back like they got through the home run all those years ago with Sosa, McGuire, and Bonds?
You know, immediately after that, the home run race did help the game. I think overall it hurt the game in the early 2000s when all the steroid talk came out and people really turned their nose up at the game a little bit. But that's a really good question for right now, because there's a lot of angry people out there. I've talked to a lot of fans who are saying, I'm done. You know, and I don't really believe them. I know they're angry right now, and I totally get that. And I think a lot of them might be crying wolf right now, but I think they'll come back. If baseball's on TV and you love baseball, you're still going to love baseball. I grew up playing catch in the front yard. It means a lot to you. You're mad right now, and I get that. Yep. I think time will heal a lot of these wounds, and I think a lot of the expanded postseason with a shorter season than having an expanded postseason. You have Mike Trout in the playoffs finally. You have a Yankees versus Dodgers World Series, all the young stars. That's the best way to market the game is the young stars. I think MLB needs to do a better job with it.
Yeah, what is your, you know, give us a percentage. What's the percentage that you think the season happens? Is it 50 right now? Is it 80? You know, where do you
think? We're going to have a season. I think as much disagreement there is on the economic side of things, both sides understand the consequences of not having a season and how tough that would be to dig out of. So I think we do have one. I don't think it's going to be 50 games. I also don't think it's going to be 80 games. I think we're running out of time for that. I think it's going to be somewhere in the middle, 60, 70 games. And I think at some point the owners will say, we'll give you full prorated money.
I want to switch gears just a little bit here, Will, and because you talk about the state and the future of baseball, and Tiki knows I'm a lifer. I love the game. But I also realize the inherent challenges based on pace of play, and it's no longer America's top sport. I obviously get that. Football's long overtaken it. You're still young enough. I'm curious, you know, growing up in where'd you go to high school, in Texas?
Yeah, Northeast Texas.
Okay. Football country, but also baseball country. Did you, when you're still young, you're still only 31 years old. So when your buddies, when you were growing up, like when you were 11, 12, the formative years, right? Were your buddies, did everybody love baseball? Did you notice back then some of the other guys were saying, it's too slow, it's too boring, let me go play football, lacrosse? I mean, your childhood, which is a lot more recent than ours, what was baseball like? I'm curious.
So that definitely wasn't the case. No one was griping about the pace of the game. I think that has a lot to do with our attention span and technology now. Everyone's staring at their phone or their iPad or computer, and especially the younger generation, they need constant stimulation, and baseball doesn't give you that. It's a thinking man's sport, and football is on the go. Basketball's on the go. Hockey's on the go. We get that, and it can keep them engaged longer. So that's why I think baseball's struggling with that.
Okay. Well, listen, Will, good having you on the show. Hopefully you're enjoying the transition to the media. And all I could tell you, not that you need my advice, but I'm sure Teak would back this up, just bring the passion and, you know, treat it the way you treat it so far. I like what I heard. Enjoy it. Don't take it too seriously, but take it seriously, if you know what I mean.
Do you think, that's awesome. I appreciate that, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for hopping on, Will. Thanks a lot, Will. Yeah, I remember when he came up. I remember, obviously, you know, Yankees are playing the Red Sox 19 times. He comes up, and he was one of those guys that I thought would be going to get, like, a thorn in our side for a long time. Wound up getting hurt, wound up bouncing over to the Padres a little bit, and fizzled out. And, I mean, I say that respectfully, fizzled out. I mean, his fizzle is like an explosion for my baseball career.
The Padres have kind of been that place, though, right?
A little bit.
Didn't they make a run? Was he part of that run that they made where they brought in, you know, Justin Upton and a few others? I remember, like, the Padres were trying to take a run at it.
When they signed Hosmer a couple of years back?
Yeah, well, I think it was even before then. It was before Hosmer. I can't remember now who they were bringing in some players. It's like, all right, Padres are trying to be competitive.
And then right away they stripped it down.
That's exactly right. I think it was the same season.
It was the same season. Oh, man. All right. Good having Will on the show here. Teak, hour three coming up. Let's see what we got. This will be fun. So there's one NBA GM out there who's feeling a little guilty. We'll tell you why. We'll tell you, is it misguided, misdirected? What's the origin of the guilt? Looking forward to that. And Taj Boyd, former Clemson quarterback as well, in about 25, 30 minutes. Clemson back in the news again with Dabo. We'll get to that coming up. Third hour, Teak and Tierney.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.